Parshas Pinchas. It says in the very beginning of Parakov Zayin, Batigravna b'no Tzolkot ben Chefer ben Gilo ben Macher ben Menashe. The daughters of Tzolkot, the son of Chefer, the son of Gilo, the son of Macher, the son of Menashe, they came close to Mishpachos Menashe ben Yosef, to the families of Menashe ben Yosef, the Rav Shevet Menashe. The Elishmos ben Osef, these are the names of his daughters, Machla Noah Chodlam Noka Visirza. Five daughters altogether, the b'no Tzolkot. Batamod and Lefnei Moshe, none of them were married. They all stood in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, Lefnei Elazar HaKohen, in front of Elazar the Kohen, Lefnei Nesiim B'Kola Eda, all the Nesiim and all the people, Pesach Ol Moed Lamor, at the opening of the Ol Moed, saying the following: Avinu Meis Bamibor, our father died in the desert.
Do they know there?
No, we don't know. Avinu Meis Bamibor, our father died in the desert. But he wasn't involved with the Eda Hanoazim Al Hashem Badas Korach, who was involved that argued against you in Adas Korach. He was not involved with Adas Korach. Kivachetom means he died with his own sin. That means he wasn't involved in the Meraglim either. He wasn't involved in the Meraglim. He wasn't involved in Korach. Who vanim lo hayulo? He never had sons. Lama yigora shem avinu mitok mishpachto? Why should the name of our father Tzlapchad be lost from our family? Ke'en lo ben, just because he has no son. Tana lanu achuzo, we should get an inheritance b'sochach avinu, within the brothers of our father's house. Vayakri Moshe's mishpatan lifnei Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu brought their mishpat, their judgment, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. And vayomer Hashem al Moshe lemor, Ke'en b'no Tzlapchad dovros. They are speaking true. Nason titein lahem achuzas nachla b'sochach avinu. Give them an inheritance within the brothers of their father. Vavartas nachla avinu lahem. And give over the nachla of their father over them. They get to inherit. Now, obviously, if you're a woman's lib guy, this parsha is yours. I mean, people look at this parsha and they take it as being like, exactly. That's what I've always been saying. Right? Women are equal to men in every which way. There's no difference between men and women in anything they do. They're all equal to one another. I mean, come on, they're all the same. Everybody looks at them no slop, but unfortunately, there have been books after books after books that have been written about B'nai Tzlapchad by people that do not, unfortunately, know what they're talking about.
But
they bring up the
B'nai
Tzlapchad. 100%. But they bring up the B'nai Tzlapchad and they bring up thing after thing after thing. They have an entire biography, a false biography of what was going on with the five daughters, basically making them look out to these women's lib people, like, power to us, power to the woman. We should be a woman with a Y, not with the E. We should take care of everything. We should be the ones in charge. We can do everything on our own. That's basically what it was the entire time. And obviously, that's not what B'nai Tzlapchad was. It's not that we're against women having their own thing. It's that that's not what B'nai Tzlapchad were doing. They weren't trying to start a women's lib movement. That wasn't their point. They were trying to do something different. So now, we have to understand a bunch of things in this parsha. Number one, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu want to get involved in their judgment that he had to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is a very simple law of inheritance. If there's no son, you go to the girl. This is something that Moshe Rabbeinu should have known straight from Moshe from Har Sinai. There's no reason why he didn't know it. So what is the reason that he wouldn't go? So the answer is, it's brought down that he was bribed by their words. The Maral Diskin brings this down, that he's bribed by their words. They specifically told him he wasn't, Tzlapchad was not involved with the Eda that argued on Moshe Rabbeinu, which caused the greatest Baal Midos ever to have Akaras Atov for the B'nai Tzlapchad. Oh, Tzlapchad wasn't involved in Korach. You're right, he wasn't involved in Korach. He would never argue on me. Tzlapchad was a great man. And because of that, he said, it's tremendous to have a person like that. So he felt that he couldn't be their Zion. He couldn't be their judge. Because he said, I'm bribed to go get involved in their mishpat, because their father did do something good for me, so I don't want to do anything whatsoever to them. So he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what should I do? How should I get involved? What should I do instead? That's the first answer, and that's an easy answer, right? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to get involved because he felt bribed. There's another answer. This is brought down by I believe it's Rebbe Yashiv, and it's a crazy, crazy answer. It goes like this. Everyone else was worried to judge it, because this chait was still opposite Moshe Rabbeinu. Now let's think for a second why it was against Moshe Rabbeinu. We say every davening on Shabbat Shacharis, Yismach Moshe the Matnas Chelko. Moshe Rabbeinu should be happy with the gift of his own chelik, of his own portion that he gave to us. What is that Matnas Chelko that he's giving to us? Shabbos. Moshe Rabbeinu stood for Shabbos. We know that in Mitzrayim, when he was still in Paro's palace, before he became the savior for the Jews, he went to Paro and asked for Paro, please, Paro, give them Shabbos off. Don't make them work on Shabbos. That was the concept that he brought up, because Shabbos was his chelek. That's what he stood for, Moshe Rabbeinu. He understood that Shabbos was something that he was. That's the idea behind it. Had they all kept two Shabbosos in the Midbar, two Shabbosos in a row, the first and the second Shabbos when they were
were taught about Shabbos,
everyone knows what would have happened. The geula would have happened. There would have been an immediate geula, and everything would have been all good. But Slavkot, on the second Shabbos, was the Mekoshish Eitzim. He got up and he either collected wood or he chopped wood. He did something wrong. He was over on Shabbos and caused there to be a Chilal Shabbos on that day and was stoned for what he had done. Now that means, although he didn't argue on Moshe Rabbeinu with Korach, he didn't get involved with the Merazim, he didn't do any of those things, but he did go up against Moshe Rabbeinu. He broke Shabbos, which is what Moshe Rabbeinu stood for. He went up against Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Now, they no longer are going to get the or from Shabbos, the light that Shabbos gives them, until La'asid Lava. Now Moshe had a suffix. Moshe had a big doubt, he didn't know what to do over here. Can he be mochel to the Benos Slavkot in this situation? Slavkot goes up against him, and the Benos Slavkot come up to him and say, well, we want something, we want to have something from you, we want to get some land. Can Moshe Rabbeinu be mochel? The fact that Slavkot did this terrible thing, went up against him, so to speak, can he be mochel it? Or can he not be mochel it? Now here's the difference. A Talmud Chacham, when it comes to Tsar Deguf, is not allowed to be mochel anything. If somebody makes fun of something that is directly on the Talmud Chacham's body, for example, or if something happens directly to the Talmud Chacham where the guy punches the Talmud Chacham or hurts the Talmud Chacham or injures him in any way, shape, or form, Talmud Chacham is not allowed to be mochel. Not until the person apologizes profusely, and there's no way to get a mechila otherwise if he starts hitting him. But if he steals from him, money from him, then he's allowed to be mochel. That's different. If he steals money, then the Talmud Chacham can say, I'm mochel. The famous story with the Chafetz Chaim, where the Chafetz Chaim had something stolen from him, and the guy ran out, and the Chafetz Chaim is running through the street, says, mochel lach, I freaking forget it, it's not mine anymore, it's yours, I'm yayish. And it's just the famous story to try to say, I'm not going to make another Jew be over on a sin because of me, and Geneva Gzela because of me. That concept of Geneva Gzela, that idea of money, a Talmud Chacham can be mochel on it. Now, here's the idea.
How does a Talmud Chacham determine when it's been enough mechila asked that he can actually be mocha on the goof?
I the same way anybody else would. You know what somebody was really.
Like, listen,
Talmud Chacham's a jerk, you deserve it.
Wait, if the
he could be a Talmud Chacham and still make a mistake or be a jerk and get himself.
No, I agreed. It has to be somebody who's not a jerk. Has to be
okay,
something
that,
we're defining Talmud Chacham as a chassid. We'll define it as a chassid, meaning a real tzaddik. We're not talking about just a guy, you know, like the guy that knows stuff or whatever. We're talking about a chassid. No, we're talking about a real chassid. That's what we're talking about. Sari de Gufa, here is the problem. Why can't the Talmud Chacham be over on Mocha on Sari de Gufa, but it can't be for Sari de Mamona? The concept is the following. Mamon, money, is only in this world, but it's not in the next world. The goof, Tsar of the goof, is in this world and in the next world. There's a Roshem forever. From now on, if somebody calls a Talmud Chacham, let's say a Mamzer, that shame Mamzer goes on that Talmud Chacham, it's Kielu, it's there forever. Yeah, people forget and whatever it is, but in their heads they'll still remember. Remember when that guy called that guy that thing? That's a bit too much. When it's something that supersedes even this world, it's something that Kielu will last forever, that a Talmud Chacham can't be mochel on unless the guy apologizes profusely. But if it's something that's monetarily involved, that has something to do with money, in which it's just in this world, it's not that big of a deal, then the Talmud Chacham not only can be mochel, he must be mochel. He has to say, I'm mochel, of course I'm mochel, but there's no way that it wouldn't allow you. So here's the idea. Shabbos. What was Shabbos to Moshe Rabbeinu? Now here's the idea. If Shabbos was eventually going to come back as a milah for Klal Yisrael, La'asid Lavo, then in the future, Bnei Yisrael were going to live a life that was always Shabbos, where we're always resting. We never have to work. We don't have to do anything. Everything is just handed to us, and we're getting everything out of the ground, everything growing from trees, everything like that. If that's going to happen again, then it's only a tsar in Olam Hazeh. The fact that Slavkot took away Shabbos from us. And Slavkot was Mechalel Shabbos. Therefore Moshe could be mochel. Because it's only in Olam Hazeh. It's like money. But if it's something that's going forever, now that Slavkot did this, we'll never have the Milo of Shabbos. We'll never live in a world of Shabbos. Shabbos will never happen ever again. If that's what it is, then it's a Tzara Degufa. And Moshe Rabbeinu can't be mochel. So Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't sure. All the Talmid HaKhamim weren't sure. Nobody knew what to do because they went up to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, listen, we don't want to be pogeya in your kavod. But it's your honor. We don't know if it was on your goof. We don't know if it was on your money because we don't know what's going to be lost at love. We don't know what Mashiach is going to be like. So what do? Moshe Rabbeinu himself didn't know what Mashiach was going to be like. That's why they went to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, am I allowed to be mochel or am I not allowed to be mochel? Says God, Don't worry. La'asid level, I'm going to give you Shabbos. La'asid level, you're going to have an awesome time. Now, it's taken away from Slavkun. So for right now, you can be mochel, and therefore you can give the land over to the no Slavkun. That was a little complicated, but that was the idea of trying to go to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But now we're going to get into the big stuff over here. Okay, the no Slavkun said, Lama Yigara. Why should our dad lose out? Why should we lose out on the name just because it's only woman and there's no men involved? Why should our dad not have a chelik in Eretz Yisrael? I don't understand that. I mean, did the Levim go up there and say that? Levim get up there and say, well, we're Levim. Why should we lose a chelik in Eretz Yisrael? Obviously, Levim didn't do that. People know who you are. If you know who you are, you're not going to have this problem. You're not going to have this issue. This is never going to happen. Meaning, it's obvious that none of us complain about where we are status-wise in life. Nobody gets up there and says to themselves, you know what? I deserve to have $1 million. Or I deserve to live this way. I deserve to live that way. Nobody does that because you know HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us born in a certain way and that's that. It's not the place for a woman to say, well, if I would have been a man, I would have gotten money. So now that I'm a woman, I don't get an akhla, I don't get an inheritance. Yes.
Maybe that was a
punishment
for the father.
Maybe that's it. In other words, the claim, the tine of the Beno Slavkun was wrong. Why should it be any worse? No, it is worse. Maybe you don't get a chelek. It's not just like, let's make sure something happens for us. Maybe nothing should happen for you. That right there is a real problem in what that claim was. That's number one. Number two, okay, how in the world did Moshe Rabbeinu not lose halacha? We sort of said that before, but he may have forgotten halachos. That happened before by Pesach Sheni, by what happens by the Mekalo, the guy who cursed out Bnei Yisrael, who cursed out HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the Mekoshe Sheitzim, what was going to be with the guy who collected wood. I understand that you can forget a halacha. Even Moshe Rabbeinu on his level, there can be a forgetfulness of some sort. But for you to not ever know the halacha, to not ever know that women get inheritances, how could you not know that? How is that not there? Then all of a sudden the Beno Slavkun came by and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Cain Beno Slavkun Dobros. Yes, they speak. I mean, hey, come on. Where does this come from? And how could Moshe Rabbeinu have messed up on such a thing? That's something that really takes a lot of work. Number three, Mishpatan. He brought their Mishpat, Lifnei Hashem. The Nun in the Torah is extra big. It says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Nun is for the Nun Shari Bina. The 50th level of understanding that even Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to get on. You mean to tell me that a bunch of women were able to get on a level that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't on? How in the world did women who didn't learn Torah, they never learned Torah, even in the Midbar, how in the world could they get to a level that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't on? That's impossible. Absolutely impossible. And it's ridiculous to say that they got to the 50th level of learning. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says it, but how could they get to it while Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't? How could that be? That's just ridiculous. That's something that can't be understood in any way, shape, or form.
Because they have to shilo if they got to the 50th level.
That's part of it. All of a sudden, they're on the 50th level. For what? What is this mishpat that all of a sudden they got there? It's mishpat nun with Hashem, the mishpat of the 50th level that was in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How did they get there? How in the world did any woman get there?
Why are we saying that from that they're on the 50th level from asking a shilo?
That's what the Rabbeinu Bechaya says.
Why is it?
The Rabbeinu Bechaya says that they got to the 50th level and understanding where they have to go. That's the question. How could it be?
I thought Slavkun gathered the sticks.
Yeah.
To be an example, he wanted to die because he was going to show Bnei Yisrael.
100%.
So he was a tzaddik.
100%. He was a very big tzaddik. But his girls wouldn't have been that big of tzaddikim. Even if they were the greatest tzaddikim, you think they would have been higher than Moshe Rabbeinu? No matter what, 50th level of learning is beyond anything that we can imagine. It's the level that Rabbi Akiva went up to the highest level of Gan Eden, right, and saw this garden, and he was like, oh, I can't go any further than that. It's on the level of Rabbi Akiva? I don't even know what that means, that Rabbi Akiva was higher than Moshe Rabbeinu. We have to understand that as well. What does it mean that Rabbi Akiva was higher than Moshe Rabbeinu? How could anybody be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu? Rabbi Akiva didn't learn with our Kadosh Baruch Hu for 40 days and 40 nights. Nobody had a chavrusa like Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody was ever able to have that. How could it be that anyone was greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, especially the Slavkun? How could that be? I mean, I'm not the greatest male chauvinist out there, but I definitely will tell you that there's no way a woman's going to beat me in Torah learning. I'll set up a Torah bowl any day. We're getting up there. You know, but there's not, I just can't, especially with Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, it's not going to happen, yeah.
Well, Yaakovino was also.
That's what it's supposed to be. The Yaakovino was on that level as well. What does that mean? This is what we have to understand. Nechama Levo, it's okay, maybe she dropped me. But regardless, everybody else, the concept is, Bruria, wife of Ramer?
Yeah.
No, come on. Oh. Bria, 300 halachas a day from 300 different rabbis, and then she went ahead and she darshaned in front of the chachamim. I could be bad, but maybe not. But Goro, our last question that we're going to ask is the following. There's a pasuk that says that Eretz Yisrael, and it's really a Tosfos. It's a Gemara in Bava Basra, Kufkov Beis. The Gemara in Bava Basra says the following. It says, Ach Begoro Yechalekas Aretz. This is what happened. Eliezer got up in front of the people and he divided up the land. Eliezer ben Aaron, he got up, he used the Urim Bitumen, and he said, okay, Binyamin is going to take that portion. Yosef is going to take that. Ephraim will take that portion. Manasseh will take that. Dan will take that. And he gave them all the things. And then they made a lottery. And they pulled out. And it's like, oh, Dan got that portion. Oh, Ephraim got that portion. Oh, Manasseh got that portion. After already saying what they were going to get, they then did a lottery. Says Rav Wolfson, why would they then do a lottery? What would be the point of a lottery then after they already divided up the land? They already said it was going to be through the Urim and Thummim. What do you need a lottery for? So that's a fourth question altogether. Let's see what it is. Two hakdamos. There are very why the Urim and Thummim can't be less trustworthy. You know what I'm saying? Well, we're talking about the Urim and Thummim. There was
only Aaron can make
it. Elazar ben Aaron can also do that. Elazar ben Aaron did it. Elazar ben Aaron was able to do it. It seems that there's something more to it. So there are two hakdamos that we all need. Here's hakdama number one. Avraham Avinu asked God, how do I know that my children will inherit Eretz Yisrael? Okay? Now, there's no question he believed that Esau were going to inherit Eretz Yisrael. That's for sure. Everybody understood they were going to get Eretz Yisrael. There was no question about that. That's for sure. Avraham Avinu didn't know, though, if they would be kicked out or not. How do I know they won't be kicked out afterwards? Maybe they're going to sin. And if they sin, maybe at that point they're going to lose the land. Maybe they're going to lose the land afterwards. How do I know they're not going to lose it? Said God, bring korbanos. The concept is, if you have korbanos, it's a brisk thing of a sarin. If you bring korbanos, every time we bring a korban in front of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, it gives us a schus to keep Eretz Yisrael. And even if we don't have a base of mikdash, we'll still keep Eretz Yisrael through our davening. We'll have korbanos, or we'll have davening, and we'll have a schus to keep Eretz Yisrael. This is the concept. The concept is, this teaches us that to live in Eretz Yisrael, all you need is a schus. You know why? Because sins by a Jew are not be'etzem. You don't sin because you're full of sin. No, you're really a good person. Just once in a while, your taivas get a hold of you, and you do something wrong. That's what's true by a Jew. I don't know if it's true by non-Jews. I have no idea how it works by them. But by a Jew, it is 100%. You have a pimple hit at all times. No matter how far down you go, that's not you. That's just your outer shell that's doing something wrong, while on the inside, you're always kadosh. So even if you sin, all you need is a schus. All you need is a korban. You need to do tshuva. And if you do that, you'll automatically go back to Eretz Yisrael. You'll automatically get over your sins. And this is what Avraham Avinu taught us. But Ma'idah, how do I know that I'm not going to lose Eretz Yisrael? But the Kenanim did. The Kenanim lost Eretz Yisrael. Says God, the Kenanim are evil. They're inherently evil. They can't get rid of that evil. They can't stay in Eretz Yisrael. You are inherently good. You will stay in Eretz Yisrael. Bad things might happen. You might do something wrong, but you will keep Eretz Yisrael forever. No matter how long you leave it for, you will eventually come back to it. That was one bracha that was given over to Avraham Avinu. Number two, Yom Kippur and Purim also work with the lottery. Now, Yom Kippur is a very strange lottery. Two lots. You pick out one seer to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and one seer to go to Azazel. One seer to be going over to somewhere else. What is a goral? A goral is beyond the mind. It's beyond anyone's seichel, anyone's understanding. It's beyond something that we in this world understand. Nobody in the world has ever been able to figure out how a lottery works. No matter how many percentages and this or that or the other, what number is going to be, it's impossible for the human mind to fathom what number will come up in a lottery. Impossible. You can't do it. And it doesn't even make any sense to us. Why should number one win? Maybe number two should win. Maybe number three should win. Why should one win over the other ones? We don't understand it. The fact that the Bulls get the number one draft pick in that draft where they were what? They were the 13th seed, I think. And all of a sudden through the lottery, they end up getting the number one seed and they end up getting Derrick Rose from it. That doesn't make any sense. I accept, obviously, the NBA cheats to make that happen. But that shouldn't make any sense. It's beyond anybody understanding such a thing. It's just, it happens. You pick the thing out and all of a sudden it's like, oh, that guy won. Oh, so crazy. And that's that. Nobody understands that. That means it's beyond our world. Any girl is like that, which means no matter what you do, God will always be behind you. That's the concept of Lifnei Hashem Titaru. You always be Torah before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is Purim. Purim is even though we sinned and we don't deserve to be saved, the goral means we're going to be okay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of us no matter what happens. Here we go. Chalukas Haaretz, dividing up the land, also deserved the goral. It doesn't matter that we did something wrong. It doesn't matter that we messed up. It doesn't matter that we did something that was totally off. Even though we're in the Tumim, that's something I can understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is commanding, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, go do this, go do that. That I can understand. But a goral means no matter what we do, you can screw up all you want. Doesn't matter. Eventually you'll keep Eretz Yisrael. And that's an awesome promise. That's a promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, that no matter what, it's just a stain. It's a stain on your shirt. It's not that the shirt is disgusting and the shirt has to be thrown out. It's a stain. You can wash the shirt and you can get rid of that stain and everything will be okay. That's the concept of Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek Olam Haba. Every Jew is a Chelek in Olam Haba, and there's nothing you can do to get rid of that. Nothing you can do. There are altogether seven people that the Gemara says don't have a Chelek in Olam Haba, and even those people, the Gemara says, some say he does. Some say he does, some say he does. Even the Gemara goes through. Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek Olam Haba, because
even that guy that just killed a little kid.
Listen, we're not too emotional to speak about something like that. Too emotional to even go into something like that. It's obvious that that person, in all senses, is a disgusting person. We don't know what to say about him. Don't go into something like that. We have no idea. But yes, Yair, in this concept, we're saying Kol Yisrael Yisrael Chiluk Mahaba, no matter how great of a sin that person does, no matter how many times or how many sins he does, everybody has that Chiluk Mahaba. How he's going to get it, I have absolutely no idea. Absolutely no idea. There have been people worse than him. There have been people worse than this guy who still have a possibility of getting Chiluk Mahaba. Now let's understand one other thing here. There's a major difference between men and women. Aside from the physical aspect, there's a huge difference between men and women in a very, very straightforward manner. Men work by their brain. Women work by their hearts. Now let's understand that simply. Obviously there are exceptions to this rule. We're generalizing, and generalizing is always wrong in a classic sense. But in the more general form, let's understand it like this. Women have more shaykhus to the feelings of life. What happens and how they feel and different things like that. A gut feeling that they'll have while ignoring svara and logic. Svara and logic. They'll ignore that if they have a feeling that takes them otherwise. That is a clear idea that women have because they go with their hearts. Men, on the other hand, are just the opposite. We clearly go with our seichel, with our logic, our logical ideas, no matter what feelings come into our head. No, logically speaking, this is the way to go. Obviously exceptions, but that's the basic idea of the moach, the brain, versus the lev, versus the heart. Benos Slavchad had a hargasha. They had a feeling that their father Slavchad, and maybe it was Madalayu Chazu, maybe it was their mazel, their malach speaking to them that they didn't quite understand, but there was something in their brains that was telling them, something that was telling them. Slavchad had a chelek olam haba. Slavchad is going to be in Olam Haba if he's not there already. Even though he sinned, the Chet Omeis, they mentioned his sin. Yeah, he sinned. But Lamaisa said, B'no Slavchad, we know. B'no Slavchad said, we know our father is in Olam Haba. That means that his Chet was only B'mikra. It wasn't like the Meraglim. It wasn't like Adas Korach. It wasn't like the Meraglim of Korach where the Gemara says they have no Chelek in Olam Haba. Slavchad, everyone agrees, has a Chelek in Olam Haba. He messed up. He messed up. He did a chait. He deserved to die. But now he has a chelek in Olam Haba. That's how they understood. Thus, they should have a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. Because just like they understood there's something, Slavchad was in Olam Haba, there's something there, there's something that he was zocha to, he should be zocha to other things as well, there should be some type of schus that he has as a remnant for him, something in this world that represents Slavchad, something that will be there in this world. And they were right! They were right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, came in Slavchad Dobros. They're right. Slavchad is in Olam Haba. Slavchad does deserve a chelek, and that's why this halakha was there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was masking to what they were saying. Why wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu Zocha to understand that? Here's the idea. The Gemara Menachos Chof Tesmanal, you probably heard this come up. Yeah.
No, if your mother wasn't alive when they...
We have no idea. We have no idea. But either way, it wouldn't matter because she wouldn't get the inheritance. But the Gemara Menachos Chof Tesmanal, it goes to the sons first, and if there's no sons, then the daughters, the wives, only inherit regarding their ksuf. tshuva and regarding other things that they might have had promised to them. The dowry. Yeah, whatever it is, but they wouldn't have gotten anything else. And Tzelchem probably had money in the Midbar. But land, especially something that's roi, as opposed to something that's muksuk, for sure she wouldn't get. There's no question about that.
Do they have to let her live there?
I'm sorry?
Do they have to let her live there?
No, they don't in theory. They have no requirement. The same way the sons.
And the sons, do they have to take care of the family?
Yeah, in a way, it depends. This is all a Gemara. It's Tarek Afal Pi. We can go into the, you know, this is the fifth Tarek of Ksuvis, and there's other things that are involved over here. But this is the following. The Gemara Menachos Chavtes Menachos, everybody's heard it in some way, shape, or form, but let's really try to understand it. Rabbi Akiva is giving shir, and Moshe Rabbeinu is allowed to go listen in. He's listening in, and Rabbi Akiva is darshaning the crowns, the tagin, and the truff, and the nekudos of all the different parts of the Torah. And Moshe Rabbeinu was listening in, and he couldn't understand it. He couldn't fathom what Rabbi Akiva was saying, and he felt bad. He felt terrible. Until he heard Rabbi Akiva being asked the question, Rabbi, where do you get this from? And Rabbi Akiva said, Hawako Moshe Misinai. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, ah, now I feel better. Now I feel much better, because it's all stemming from me anyway. How does it possibly happen? How could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand this concept? So let's understand this. This is not a chisaron in Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe and Rabbi Akiva are from two totally different worlds. Moshe was equal to 600,000 people, which means he was involved in all 600,000 letters of the Torah. He stood for all those letters. And granted, there's only 301,845, but what that means is with the Targum, or with the double, whatever you want to say, there are 600,000 letters in the Torah that he was shayach to. He's shayach to the Etzem Torah, to the Torah itself, not the little tiny things that could be extrapolated, that could be figured out later on in time. It doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu even understands the concept of electricity when the Torah was given. Electricity and how it works and how to apply it based on the laws that were given originally within the Torah is something that's just taken from there and understood from there. But if Moshe Rabbeinu would be around to hear how that shir works, it doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu has to understand that completely as Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach understood it. It's not a chisaron in Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was so clear in the laws that were given to him from Moshe Rabbeinu, in the Etzem Torah, in the 613 mitzvahs and everything that was actually given. He was 100% Torah Misinai. He didn't need and didn't have to come up with all these different extrapolations that could come out from there. Rabbi Akiva's neshama was a different type of neshama. He was a ger, as we know. His neshama was part of the dakus. It was a thin type of neshama, so to speak, that understood the thinness, the little tiny things, the holes between the, I guess, between the cracks, the little things that were falling through, the tiny little locals, how to be able to pull them out and get them. He was able to pull onto that. It'd be basically like going up to a guy who is a brilliant, brilliant, obviously a billion of dollars, a brilliant scientist, a guy who understands calculus to the nth degree, right? A guy who's just an expert at all that stuff, and trying to explain to him like a small concept in baseball. Baseball has no shaykhus to what you're the expert in. Yes, it's another chokmah. It's another type of wisdom. It's something that's tremendous and whatever it is. And there is a wisdom to it. There is a chokmah to it. But it's no shaykhus to what we're talking about. It is no shaykhus to what Moshe Rabbeinu was good at and what he needed to know for Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was not in tune, this is a crazy thought, not in tune at all to his feelings, to his argashos. And you know why? He couldn't be. If he was influenced in any way, shape, or form by anybody else in Klal Yisrael, what would have been with the Torah? The Torah would have been, I hate to say the word, but bastardized into this feelings type of Torah, where Moshe Rabbeinu one day was a happy guy, Moshe Rabbeinu the other day was a sad guy, and on happy day he said one thing, and on sad day he said another thing. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah. Everything's straight from him. He can't say anything but the absolute truth from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There can be nothing else. He can't be influenced. He can't be talked to. He can't have anything else happen to him. He can't care about anyone else in the world more than any other person. He has to love Klal Yisrael equally. His sons, like anybody else out there, he couldn't care about anybody more than that. So the concept would be, is that Moshe Rabbeinu could not get past a certain level, because in this world, you can't do that. You can't learn and learn and learn until you get to the 50th level. You won't get there. So he worked his way up. He worked his way up to level 1, level 2, level 3, all the way up to 49. And Moshe Rabbeinu was on the 49th level, the greatest level that anybody can attain. But here's the difference. The B'nai Sulchan and Rabbi Akiva were able to have hargashos They were able to have feelings that were brought in. They were able to feel that there's a malach that's telling them things, and they felt like, you know, I feel like Slavkot goes into Olam Haba. You know, Rabbi Akiva said, I feel like there's a pshat over here that I'm trying to get. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't privy to that because he didn't want to get that. That wasn't the type of Torah that he was into. So Rabbi Akiva was able to get to the 50th level, but Slavkot were able to get to the 50th level with the help, not by building their way up. Slavkot didn't even learn Torah. Rabbi Akiva wasn't so going to be able to get up to that way in that type of form, but rather because Mazalayhu Chazu, their mazal saw what they needed to get and what they needed to know. And that's not a chisaron in any way, shape, or form in Moshe Rabbeinu. So when it came to this, Moshe Rabbeinu could not judge this case. He couldn't do it. Because they're going along and they're telling him something from the 50th level, from Shar Nun. Slavkot's in Olam Haba. If Slavkot's in Olam Haba, he deserves a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. He deserves to have a chelek right here in Eretz Yisrael. He should have something here. And they're sitting there, Mishpatan, the Nun, the big Nun for Shar Nun. They were on the 50th level. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't know what you're talking about. Slavkot sinned. He deserved to die. I don't know what's in Olam Haba. How do you know that he has a chelek in Olam Haba? How would you have any idea? So what do you mean, Moshe Rabbeinu? We know it. It's just something there. We can't explain it to you. It's just we know that our father is in Olam Haba. There's something that we're missing here. Moshe Rabbeinu, we're missing something. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I've never heard anything like this. But I'll go to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And going to a Kaddish Baruch Hu brought this halakha down into a halakha that was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu. And no Slavkot were zocha to be able to have such a thing. There were such great tzaddikos. Tzaddikosos, I don't know how to pronounce it in Hebrew, but there were such great tzaddikim as women that they were able to do, they were able to get themselves to that level in such a way that they were zocha for the halakha to come to them. But it wasn't a chisaron in Moshe Rabbeinu bechlal. And Rabbi Akiva will never be, and it's not anything. It's not knocking down the covenant of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva will never be like Moshe Rabbeinu. There's no one like Moshe Rabbeinu. But Moshe Rabbeinu, because of that reason, he was so great, he couldn't fathom something that just wasn't as important as Kol HaTorah Kula. This is different. This is just a little bit different. Now let's go into Tzlokot for 1 second, we'll end with Tzlokot. Yeah.
They were basically able to skip up to the 50th level?
Skip it up, yeah. Skip. And all because of their mazel.
Is it that they weren't able to understand something on, like, let's say, the 30th level?
For sure not. For sure not. If they would have been in a shir with Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu would have said something to them and said, like, how do you understand this Tosfos? They would have been like, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. They wouldn't have gotten any of that. If they would have just sat there and tried to learn up a pasuk, what do you think about this pasuk over here? They wouldn't have gotten that. But for them to have a feeling, a hargasha of something on the 50th level, anyone can have that if you're Zocha. Anyone can have that.
I still don't get this should have been something that Moshe learned on Har Sinai. This should have been halacha that he learned. He learned the Kol HaRefuah on Har Sinai. So how is it that he didn't...
All because of this lesson, for us to be able to realize that Kol Yisrael Yishan Chelek Olam Haba, for them to be Zocha for this to happen. Yeah, he did not. He never received this Nebuah. He was never told it in Har Sinai. It's something that was not given to him until this point in the Midbar. It's the first time that it came up. They never had it until now. Very quickly, who was Slavkot? In Shabbos, Tapsadi Vavamabez, Rabbi Akiva says that Slavkot was the Mekosha Shaitim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bezeri yells at him. He was the guy who collected the wood in the Midbar on Shabbos, and he was killed. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bezeri yells at him. He said, Rabbi Akiva, what are you doing? The Torah doesn't say who he is. You're going to say who he is? Rabbi Akiva, how could you say such a thing? So how could you be Megala the Chait? Seder Adoros on page 92 brings down from the Ramami Prano that his Gilgal, when he came back to Slavkot, it came into the guy in Yavamis Tapsadi Vavamabez. There was a guy who was riding his horse on Shabbos at the time when the Greeks were in charge of Bnei Yisrael. And Bnei Yisrael needed to make a gather. People were doing crazy things on Shabbos. And even though riding a horse on Shabbos is at best a drabanan, the reason why is because you might come to break a stick off a branch and then hit the horse with it. At best a drabanan. There's no deal worse than riding a horse. They took the guy and they stoned him. And the reason why they did it is to show everybody that Shabbos is chomer. And Chachamim are allowed to, if need be, to make an example of a certain person, even though he doesn't necessarily deserve that death from the Torah. They're allowed to make examples. They're allowed to do such things. Siman Beis, Shulchan Aruch, and Kosher Mishpat. That's where it all comes from. So they did that to this guy. Says the Rami Pano, that guy was Slavkot. That's number one. Number two, he got another tikkun from a guy mentioned in Shabbos, Kuf Nun Amid Aleph, who almost fenced up his field on Shabbos. He saw there was a breach in his field where there was an opening in the fence. He was afraid of wild animals getting in. What? He was about to go in. He saw there was a breach in the field. There was something there. He was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe. And he was about to go fence it up, and he didn't. And a caper bush
grew in its place. Anybody know what a caper bush is called in Hebrew? Why would you know? Slough. The Gemara says, Slough chad Allah lo. A slough, one caper bush, came up in its place and put itself in that position for him to be able to have there. Says the Ramami Pano, that was the tikkun for slough chad. That slough chad broke Shabbos. This guy wanted to break Shabbos, didn't, and was rewarded with a slough chad that grew in its place to be able to make the gather all around the field.
It's
all the way around, right? Tosos Baba Basra, Kuf Yud Testament Beis. Tosos Baba Basra, Kuf Yud Testament Beis, Dibur Maskla Filu, says that slough chad did the chait l'shem shamayim. He saw that the people said, oh, we're going to die anyway, we're not going to make it to Eretz Yisrael, so why should we keep the mitzvot? What's the point in keeping mitzvot? And he was afraid that everybody was going to do that. So he tried to show people the chumrah of Shabbos because they were treating it so lightly. So he picked up sticks and collected them on Shabbos, stood up Adam for himself. The Adam said to him, don't you realize you're going to be killed if you do this on Shabbos? He said, I know. I'll peek in, I'm doing it anyway. They brought in the Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu knew. Sotho was a big tzaddik. He said, what are you doing? Sotho said, no. He said, there's something wrong here, and that's why he went to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He went to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, what should I do? Should I kill him anyway? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, kill him anyway. The Marsha asks, how is that possible? You're not Chayiv Misa. If you dig a hole, and you don't do it for the hole, which is Choresh, but you just want the dirt, are you Chayiv on Shabbos?
Yes.
Say no.
No.
Say no. It's called a Malacha She'ina Tzricha Legufa. It's a Malacha. You don't need it for the actual Malacha. You're doing a malacha, but you're not doing it for the purpose of the malacha, which is to make a hole. You're just taking the dirt and you're keeping the dirt for yourself. It's a malacha. She'ina tzricha legufa. You're a putter on Shabbos. It's an Isra Durabanan. It's an Isra Durabanan, but there's no Durabanans back then. So how could slough be killed, says the Marsha?
It can still be a mitzvah tzricha legufa if he needed the wood for his fireplace, but beyond that...
But what was he needing it for? He didn't need the wood. He did it only to show them a lesson. Says the Marsha, Tosus is right that he only did it for that. Then it's a malacha shen isra
legufa. I have to shul on Shabbos because I don't really want to go to shul.
Not now. Back in the midbar you could. So bring your car back there. Yeah, but now it's Gehenna. And we'll stone you. But he says, so how could it be? So he says that's exactly why the tzaddik did it. Lamaise said he wasn't chayiv misa at the end of the day. At the end of the day, he wasn't chayiv misa. But however, did the Adam know? Can you ever judge a case based on malacha shen tzrich legufa? You went up to the guy. Do you realize that what you're doing right now is chayiv misa? He said, apal pi kan, I'm doing it anyway. They got to kill you. Even if you say, oh, I was thinking about just keeping the dirt. Oh, I was just trying to save Klal Yisrael. You can't say that. We have Adam, you had Asra, you said apal pi kan, and he did the malacha. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to kill him. He had to kill him. But he didn't need the
Adam. You have to ask Hashem.
You're right.
If his feelings weren't in the way, then why didn't
he
even...
He had a problem because he knew how big of a tzaddik he was. You're right. There was one big tzaddik over here and there was something wrong with the case. He knew there was something wrong and he didn't know if there was Adam. You're right. He didn't know if there was Adam that were off. That was his big issue. So he went around. He collected. He chopped Adam. He wanted to show everyone the halacha. That was slachot. His tikkun was to be killed for another Isser Drabanan. Just like he did an Isser Drabanan and he was killed for it. He did another Isser Drabanan by doing what? By riding on a horse. That was an Isser Drabanan. Says, it's unbelievable. I forgot who it was. Okay, regardless. The sefer that I saw this in, he did it specifically in order to show the people that they shouldn't ride horses on Shabbos. The same way that slough chad did it. Slough chad only collected the wood to show them how chomer Shabbos is. This guy did it again. He did it again to show them how chomer Shabbos is. And so too with the guy who was going to fence up his fence on Shabbos. He knew that people were being makel on Shabbos. He saw that it was a breach. And he wanted to do it, to fence it up, to show everybody how chomer Shabbos was. But this time he said, you know what? This happened to me twice already. It's enough getting stoned. I'm stopping. I'm not going to do it this time. I'm not going to break Shabbos this time. And this time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, now you get a tikkun. That was the final tikkun of Tzlach Chod. That was what he stood for. And that's how, the way we know, is that, listen to this. What ended up happening? The Tzlach, the caper bush, came up and finished the fence. Because Tzlach Chod made a gedder. He was the first Isser Drabanan for all of Klal Yisrael. telling them, don't be over even on Isser Drabanan on Shabbos. Don't even do that. That's what Tzolchot stands for, and that's why specifically a Geder was made from him. What an unbelievable line from Tzolchot. That's the concept. Our summary is, why didn't Moshe take the case? We give a little bit of a Lumdisha answer. The girl is beyond. These girls were able to see beyond. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't, but that's not a Chisaron. Not a Chisaron in Moshe Rabbeinu. The girls were able to find a way past through their mazel while Moshe Rabbeinu went up through learning. And then we have the Tikkun of Tzolchot, how Tzolchot was fixed up, and that's all that. Have a good Shabbos, everybody. Can we get together?